This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the new Golden State Hoop podcast. I sound a little bit like Zach Lowe. Welcome to the Low Post. So what we're going to do, as you can see, we have a little bit of a branding change here if you're watching on YouTube. If you clicked on the pod on the podcast feed, you'll notice a name change as well. We have combined the Valkyries podcast and the Warriors podcast into one podcast for the YouTube live stream and for the audio feed on BSPN. Now, we're also going to split our segments, our Valkyrie segments and our Warrior segments, into individual videos on YouTube. So if you don't want to watch Warriors content, you only want to watch the Valkyrie stuff, we will have that in a separate video, and vice versa. If you don't want to watch Valk stuff, we're uploading the Warriors stuff separately on YouTube. That will be uploaded not immediately after the live stream, but it'll be uploaded sometime Friday morning. And as you'll also notice, this is not the Valk's Valley show any longer. Brian had an idea a few weeks ago to take advantage of the vigor of the Valkyries audience, and he thought Podhalla would be a good name, and I think it is a very good name. So we have changed from Valk's Valley to Podhalla. We have a new logo, which you can see if you're watching on YouTube, and we are raring and ready to go. And Bri, since we are splitting the podcast and we're having both segments on the same podcast, we'll focus first with Valkyries because they're in season. Their things are happening right now. The Warriors are in the off season. And during the Warrior season, if there's less Valkyries content, we'll probably flip that and begin the show with Warrior stuff and end the show with Valkyrie stuff. So are you ready for your very first Podhalla segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. You've been on this one, which is if the Valkyries make the playoffs, and more than likely they will be in the bottom four seeds if they do make the playoffs. And they're looking good right now, by the way. They're looking strong, and they're right there. There is a possibility that the second game of the first round series, which is a three-gamer, will not able to be at Ballhalla because of the Laver tournament or whatever the tennis tournament is that Chase Center is hosting. It sounds like it was a deal that was signed even before the Valkyries were in existence, all the way back in 2023, and it looks like the tournament will not have started yet, but they'll be putting the courts together and everything. So it looks like the Valkyries may be pushed out of Ballhalla for their one game first round series that they will host.
Bummer, but it sounds like it was something that was agreed to, you know, before they even had a WNBA team. So it's kind of hard to be like, you shoulda, coulda, woulda. But definitely, like, feels like a strong point for the entire season. They keep hammering it on the broadcast is another sellout, another sellout, another sellout, another sellout. It just feels unfortunate that a WNBA team for their playoffs will not be able to play in their home arena. And I understand that it was probably much worse in years past for other WNBA teams. Like, I think the Valkyries are very fortunate to have fallback options that are still pretty good options. You know, I remember AT saying that, like, at the Mohegan, when they were practicing for the playoffs, they had to share the court with, like, a kid's birthday party or something like that. You know, so just, like, at least the Valkyries still have, like, Oracle or what is it called now? Oakland Arena or something. And then the SAP Center to potentially fall back on. So That would be pretty cool, either location. I think we maybe talked about this a couple months ago, and it's kind of a cool idea to get back into the Oracle, original Oracle Arena. That I think that would be electric. And then also just, you know, if you do it in San Jose, like a guaranteed sellout. I think guaranteed sellout across the board. What's the seating look like in like seating availability in those arenas?
They're all pretty much similar. I think I want to say Oakland probably holds about 1,000 more. So if you're talking like 18 in San Jose, you're talking about 19 in Oakland, and I think Chase Center is like probably right in the middle of both or something. So I think there'll be enough seats.
Yeah, sellouts will happen regardless, but still a little bit of a bummer. But not
do we know why Oakland is not just the place? They have said from the beginning their home office is in Oakland. They are an Oakland and San Francisco team. Why wouldn't they just play in the Oakland arena unless something has happened to that venue and it's, I don't know if it's not good enough anymore, but the Warriors played there until 2019.
I'm trying to think if there was like a Globetrotters thing there. Like I've got to imagine it's still available, but I don't know. Is the SAP Center, is it better?
The SAP Center is newer. The SAP Center is easier to get around. The Oakland Arena, like when you're walking out in the concourse area, like it kind of gets really thin in moments. So there, it creates a lot of traffic. I was just there, I want to say 2 years ago. And it's the same as it ever was. You know, it's not a modern NBA arena. So I don't know what the reason would be to not go there, especially if you're calling yourself a San Francisco and Oakland team because of, you know, the roots. Like, that's how they sold it to us. Remember when we went to that talk with Ohema and they were talking about the Oakland-San Francisco thing? They wanted roots in both areas. So it doesn't make any sense to me to come to San Jose, even though for me, that'd be great because, you know, I'm 10 minutes away from the SAP Center. But it just seems like Oakland is the easy win. I'm not sure why they just don't say that it's going to be in Oakland.
I agree with you. I just wonder if, you know, TK in his little article made it sound like it's more than likely going to be SAP. So I wonder if there's conflicting events at Oakland or if there's beef.
It's not like that place is booked constantly.
I don't know. Maybe there's beef with the owners of the arena and Joe doing his own thing. Maybe there's about that. Like, screw you, man. We're going to charge an arm and a leg. I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't know what the reason is, but the ghost of, I always forget how to pronounce that last name, the Levy Center. I don't even know what the Levy Center is. Let me look up the Levy Center. So the Levy Center is in, I guess, what is it, in Santa Clara? So it's a Santa Clara indoor basketball arena, but the capacity is so much smaller than the, so you're talking like 5,000, at least as far as the numbers that I'm seeing, compared to the 18,000 or whatever that you'd want to pack the Valhalla or, you know, Oakland or the SAP Center. So I just think it's a little bit too small. So the other option that I heard was Sacramento, but who wants to go to Sacramento to watch a Valkyries game? Like, they're completely different areas. They're not a very easy drive. If you're thinking about, like, let's say, I don't know what day that game would be, but if it's a Tuesday night and it's, let's say that it's a 7 o'clock start, how early would people living in the Bay Area have to leave to drive out to Sacramento and not hit traffic? Like, that sounds like a terrible idea. So I hope Sacramento is like the worst case scenario here. And you know, it is literally either Oakland or San Jose, and preferably Oakland. Like, it just has to be Oakland. I don't see why they wouldn't be able to, you know, make some moves to make sure that it is 100% Oakland. All right. Looks like Bri is back, and we'll see how his audio and his video is.
Is it audio lagging or both?
Both.
Oh, man.
It is both. What I was basically saying while you were out was Sacramento seems like the third option, and I just think that would be a disaster.
Oh,
who wants to drive out
terrible.
To Sacramento on a weeknight, leaving, what do you have to leave, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you'll still get hit crazy traffic? Like, that just sounds like an awful idea.
Yeah, nothing against Sac and their WNBA fan base, formerly the Monarchs over there, but I think the majority of your fan base is in the Bay Area.
And yes, yeah, 100%. So the other kind of story going on in Valkyrie's land, of course, the very important playoff positioning here. Now, last time we recorded, I was like, okay, they need to split these Phoenix games. And you were like, no, they need to win both. And, realistically, you would love to win both. They lost the first game. I thought they played really well, considering they were not hitting their three-pointers, which had been really the thing that has been carrying them of late. Like, they went from a 29% three-point shooting team to a 35% three-point shooting team. So they're making a handful more a game, and then they went backwards in the recent Phoenix game. They only lost by 7 points or whatever, but that game, it just kind of recentered me as far as my expectations, because they were missing some key pieces. It doesn't surprise anybody, I don't think, that when Chechi Zandelicini is missing, like, okay, yeah, she's your best 3-point shooter. She's been cooking, and her loss was really, really felt. What did you think about these last couple of games, the Atlanta game and the Phoenix game?
I think the Atlanta one is tough. If we were to revisit your conversation about who do you want to see in the playoffs, it not being Minnesota, New York, and Las Vegas, that was a rough Atlanta game. It kind of felt like they were just better than us, kind of. I know Ileana Rupert goes down, and that's where the swing, in my opinion, happens, because you try to punish Griner and Bree Jones for playing drop coverage, and having Rupert out there kind of punishes that, because she can stretch the floor. So, not didn't love that, especially it being at home. For the Phoenix game, though, I kind of feel like, I don't know. So did they say left calf strain for Zandelicini, or a bruise of some sort? And then Tip was just rest?
I didn't see a reason. Tip
was just rest.
Okay. I saw two things for Tip. The first thing that I saw was illness. And then the second thing I saw was rest. And I thought, unless she is fatigued, or unless, maybe she wasn't feeling well, but maybe not well enough to be illness. Like, I can't see why she wouldn't play. Everyone's going to be tired, right? So I lean towards the illness thing. That sounds a little bit more reasonable than just rest, especially in this stretch of games where they are playing these games like playoff games, shortening the bench, playing their top players heavier minutes. So it didn't make sense to me that she would have just been resting for that game.
Like, I don't think the Valkyries are playing this in their minds of, oh, let's try to split this. Like, they're playing like they're trying to win both of them. But if you are trying to split this, I will say Tuesday was probably the best chance to split. You're at home, and, it's the classic Valkyries where it's like, it doesn't matter who's available. They're still going to be like kind of in the game if it's at home. Kate Martin kind of just stepped up and hit a ton of threes. But it's going to be, I got to imagine, Phoenix is favored on Friday. They're at home. Valkyries, we don't know who's going to be available and who's not. So, I threw a bold prediction out there that they need to take both. You said split. They lost one. There's a very high possibility they lose both of these. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, it was kind of my fear, but I always look at these things sort of in the worst case scenario vein. They had played so. Who did they play before Atlanta?
Chicago, they whooped them.
Whooped Chicago. Was it Washington before that?
I believe so.
And they were hot, right? They shot well. They ran away, and they looked great. Of course, lower competition. We talked about Atlanta and just the length and the size. And when Rupert gets elbowed in the side of the head, that makes you know, if you're playing her as a stretch to kind of bring out the bigs, then yeah, that's probably the worst person to go down in those moments, even though she herself wasn't really, they weren't really shooting all that well either. But still, just the idea of the flow of the offense, like that whole thing that they were doing made a whole lot of sense. And then Burton went down as well, though she came back, and that seemed to kind of kill their rhythm there. The Phoenix matchup to me is better. I just feel like they play more of that style. They can play, their style fits better against Phoenix. You know, the Atlanta game, they kind of got beat at their own game with the 3-point shooting, where Atlanta was just taking advantage and hitting clutch threes. And you're like, okay, if we're not making threes, we're not gonna, this outcome is in doubt, or this outcome is unsurmountable. The lead is unsurmountable. But the Phoenix game, I always kind of felt like, okay, if they could just make a run, you know, we can do it, because the Valkyries play a very specific game. They slow it down. If they can rebound, then they control the ball. Phoenix is kind of up and down, and they kind of stunt Phoenix a little bit. But again, if you're missing so many players, then it makes it a little bit harder. I see there's a difference in opinion on how well Kate Martin actually played the other night, because she had to play really heavy minutes, and a lot of people were like, you know, she's shooting, you know, she's killing it from the outside. I think she's like 4 of 11 or something. And then on the flip side is like, oh, she's the reason we lost. Like she couldn't pick up the slack or whatever. She is so interesting when it comes to the kind of the local analysis versus the national analysis. I think some of it is because she's so famous in the WNBA that the outside world just thinks of her as like, oh, she's Caitlin's buddy. Of course she's cool. But like, I'm starting to see a lot of criticism from Valkyries fans about how she plays when she does have to play. Like, I think she's like, social media wise, she's great. She seems like she's doing a really good job and is very comfortable in the community. She was in Us Weekly on their website the other day about fashion. So she's adapting well, but then when you have to play, like the play has to match up a little bit, and she's, I don't know. She makes some shots, but I don't sense that she's a focal part of this offense when she's in the game.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we've stated multiple times, like, I feel like every week we've actually kind of talked about her now. But we like her. We're fans of her on this show, but I think she needs to perfect that role of coming in, hitting a couple threes, and going out. It kind of felt like it feels like as of now, she needs a like longer leash. She needs more minutes to be able to produce. Like, in my opinion, I thought she would, you know, I'm not expecting her to be the best player at any point in the game, but I even though maybe the, you know, 4 for 11, you said, like, that's not great from the 3-point percentage, but, you know, I think that's over 33. So, but,
barely,
but I think she's not like this super talented offensive scorer, right? It's really just the 3-point shot. There's no like middies, you know, the driving stuff is kind of hit or miss. It's really just the 3-pointers. So if she can just come in for spot minutes and just be able to hit a couple threes, like, that's not to put a ceiling on a second year player, but I feel like, you know, she's a, what, 25 or 26. I think that's probably going to be her game in order to stick in rotations. Like, I think she could be in playoff rotations if she could just come in and hit a couple of those threes and go out. But when you expect more, I'm sure like any other role player, the flaws start to like appear a little more. What'd you think about Phoenix though? Because like you said, it seems like we kind of match up better against them. Whereas I'd argue maybe they're more talented on paper than Atlanta, but you know, cause they have Satu, Ka, and of course AT. And I think that was the first time we saw the Valkyries played against Ka two nights ago, unless I'm mistaken. I thought she was, you know, I think she finished maybe like 9 and 19, but I thought that she was cooking. But you know, I just checked right now because I was going to make a statement, but I wanted to have the facts. And actually turns out I'm wrong. Is that they're third in defensive rating, but I kind of felt I wasn't that impressed with them defensively.
And maybe that's a, you know, Valkyries being at home, so they just always feed off the crowd and they're able to hit shots. But I thought
some
that they
of it
were
is just their pace too, right? Because they slow the game down.
Yeah,
and you know, they offensively they slow the game down, so the other team, you know, they can't just get out and run constantly if you have one team slowing it down a little bit. But you know, the other thing is they play such great team defense, and Veronica Burton has been fantastic at, you know, just stopping the ball as much as she can. And you know, the thing about going back to the Kate thing for a second, the one thing that I liked about Kate earlier in the season is that she was trying to do some things that were a little bit of like a slick basketball player who maybe is a little less athletic would do. So you saw a lot of pump fakes. You saw a lot of, like, you know, fakes here and there with the basketball where she would actually get a little bit of space, and sometimes she would finish and sometimes she would not. Now it feels like she sees herself clearly as a corner three-point shooter. And if she doesn't get those shots up, she's not doing her job. And so sometimes it feels like she's forcing those shots because she knows that that's why she's in the game. And some of them, she's not open, but she can still get the shot off. And others, I think they actually are good shots. A lot of the time where she seems to feel most comfortable is when she's shooting them off of a fast break, in a sense, where she can go to her spot and then they can find her. She seems really comfortable there. But in the flow of the offense, she does not seem very comfortable letting the ball go. So it does seem a little bit forced.
It's like she's able to hit the ones that's like not expected, you know, like you said, fast break or just kind of a quick one versus like an actual like setup in the offense, shoot it. And yeah, I definitely saw
some,
that.
Rob was talking about Kayla Charles in the chat. If she could shoot from the outside, I think she'd be in the game now. But you see the flaw in her game is comfortability with pulling up from the outside. Like, she had some opportunities in the last game, and there's a couple that I think barely nicked the rim in you know, later in the game. So
she,
I think
she
if
tried
she,
to do a she tried to do a Kate where, you know, shooting it unexpectedly, shooting it when maybe you're not supposed to. Worst airball of the season, probably.
Yeah, like off rhythm or whatever to take advantage of the defense. Yeah. But I think Charles would get more run if she could hit the three or hit the outside shot a little bit.
Yeah, she was a little impressive in that game. And I really do wonder if there's a serious conversation of when everyone's back that Amihir is the one, just because of positional depth that...
And we saw them go small with Amihir a few times. We'd been talking about it, and they have been doing that a little bit more because Temi keeps getting in foul trouble. So they've had to go. And I actually like the look because she's so athletic and she just gets down the court so quickly, but they struggle with rebounding.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, when you go small, of course you're not going to get the rebounds. If they don't rebound, they cannot get into their stuff. And
that kind of seems like where the game swung is like a combination of looks aren't falling, but then when Phoenix would miss, they'd just get the offensive board, and it's like so deflating.
Yeah. Someone who we are very much fans of, even though she hasn't stepped on the court in the WNBA yet, Yuste Yotsite was at the game recently. They showed her in the crowd. She hit the drum, and I've seen some quotes from her. So like I'm listening to her, and I sort of listened to her in the voice when she did the interview with her, like that same polished like 19-year-old voice, man. But she was with Thornton. They were in one of the boxes. And I was just like, man, I wish she could just go put on a uniform right now. Like, we could use her right now. Just have her line up, you know, hit some middies, stretch the floor a little bit, handle the rock. Like, I was like, we could just use her. She would be so good with the team right now.
It was felt. She even said on the interview that at some time in August is when she would come over and, I don't know, get introduced to the team and watch a game. So I think it's cool in retrospect that you see all these quotes about her coming out, and some of it's just stuff from that we already asked her about from our interview of, like, you know, it's like I already knew that because we already talked to her about it. But some of the stuff where she's saying she's been watching the Valkyries, I think that's pretty cool considering how busy it seems like her schedule's been after, you know, training for Eurobasket and then Eurobasket and then maybe taking a week or two off after Eurobasket, and now she's here. Like, she's been keeping up with the season. She actually also posted like a video today, like one of those off-season workout videos, and I think there's a clear emphasis on strength and lifting weights, which yeah, she talked about in our interview.
That's exactly what she said.
Super exciting because I think you can, she looks a little like, you know, slimmer, and then you see like the women in the WNBA and they seem like more built. So I think that's a good thing to be focusing on.
She's still young too.
Yeah, she's 19 years old, and my 19 physique versus what my physique is now is probably completely different. I don't know if it's good or bad, but completely different. Yeah, super excited.
It's going to be so fun, and you know that's what's so great about this team is being so early and being there at the beginning. I imagine, and we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about this more during the offseason, but what the roster looks like next year versus what it looked like this year, and with the free agency and the WNBA and with the collective bargaining and with all that influx, just knowing that she is going to be on the roster next year, that is that is something that you can look forward to and go, okay, like we can look forward to that. She's going to be there. One more thing before we get to the kind of the playoff positioning here. What do you think of Carla Late's aggressiveness? Like, I'm starting to see, she's always aggressive. Maybe confidence is the better thing. Her early in the season, her outside shot was just, she couldn't find it. Now she's finding it more. She seems to be a little bit more comfortable. She's even getting the minutes alongside Burton. They're playing the 2-point guard look a lot lately. She still has the same issue. She's also very young. She's also she gets bumped all over the court. But having two ball handlers seems to work well. And if she can actually shoot it, I think it's amazing. But I do like seeing her play with so much more confidence and seeing the results of that ball going in.
Yeah, I think her getting to play alongside Veronica allows her to be more like aggressive in the scoring side, kind of what we saw earlier in the season. Whereas, you know, when they match her up with Tip, she kind of has to be the point guard. So since Tip was not available against Phoenix, I think we got to see a little bit more of her confidence in the outside shot. And, you know, like you said, Carla's, I think she's 21 now, or she's still 20, but, you know, first year in the W, did the Eustay thing where she didn't go her first year. And so this is her first year, and I think like any other rookie, you just need to see more time to get more comfortable and more confident. And I think she's kind of following that progression, which is very nice to see, because I think she's going to be on the roster next year without a doubt. I think she's one of the protected players in the expansion draft. So you like to see that, you know, start of the season, you like to see a different result and a better result as the season progresses. Like, I think we've even met, I know I always do this thing in the podcast where I'm like, I think we've talked about this before, but in the last pod or two, like, I think I even said, if you just grab her 3-point percentage post All-Star break, and I should have just done the number to check now, maybe I'll do it while you're talking and see if that's even available. But if you do post All-Star break her 3-point percentage, I gotta imagine it's above whatever cruddy percentage the season is. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in the 30s.
So Rob was asking in the chat if the WNBA is sticking to the 6 players protected. We didn't know last year for like when the expansion draft was, like, the rules were not laid out very early on. Like, I remember listening to what is now No Offseason with Sabrina and Ben and Zena. And they were just like, yeah, we just don't know the rules yet. The WNBA hasn't come out with these rules. So hopefully this year, hopefully, because we just had the Valkyries experience and we know they're going to have to do it again, the rules will be out there a little bit earlier than they were, because I think people are going to be interested, right? Like, they didn't even televise the expansion draft last year. Not that I don't know if they will this year or not, but you could at least run it on YouTube. If you don't have a spot for it on one of the main channels, you could at least run it on your own League Pass where, you know, a large majority of your hardcore fans are there already. But it's stuff like that where the W, you know, I will say this until I'm red in the face. They did not see the Caitlin Clark thing coming last year, and they were not prepared for it. So this influx of viewership and fandom, add to that the Valkyries and the Valkyries selling out every game and helping raise the average attendance for all of the WNBA, which I think they just set a record for the most attendance in the history of the league. Like, all of those things coming in these last 2 years, I still don't feel like the WNBA is necessarily ready for it. So next year, the new media rights deal kicks in. They get the extra money from the TV rights. Hopefully they can continue to build the infrastructure with the league, and we can really see some how you would expect a pro sports league to be run. So that is my hope. And I know it's growing pains. Everybody goes through them. There's been such little support, I would say, for the WNBA previously, but now people see that the possibility of their investment coming to fruition. So now they're all interested, but it's like, man, you know, we could have been building this infrastructure. You could have seen like college basketball and Paige. Like, we knew Paige was coming like 5 years ago. Like, if you were watching women's college basketball. But just the fact that they weren't ready for Caitlin is kind of mind-boggling. All right, let's talk a little bit about the playoff situation here. So I think this is right. I think I have the most updated, but I think the Valkyries sit seventh, half a game above Seattle, who's kind of fallen a little bit, and they are a full game behind Indiana. The Aces have kind of distance themselves, and you kind of wonder if the Aces are going to get into the top two, you know, the top three, the top two. They've been so hot of late. What do you think? Do you think we still have to worry about the Sparks and the Mystics? It would have been nice if Paige's 44 points could have closed out the Sparks the other night, but it did not. Kelsey Plum, no thank you, Kelsey Plum. But Where do you see them? They got the game with Phoenix coming up again. That is going to be a tough one, but you know, 7-8 seems doable. I'm just complete because of Bay Area sports right now and how the Giants just fell off the face of the earth. I'm kind of waiting for the possibility of that happening. I don't want to be surprised, but at the same time, I'm kind of confident in the way that this team is playing if they could just stay healthy.
I don't think you have to worry about Washington. They are. What is it? Where are the games back?
16
looks
and
like
19.
They are full two games back from the Valkyries. The Valkyries also hold the tiebreaker for Washington because I think we've beaten them all three times. And I don't know if they play again or not. But yeah, just looking at it, I don't think you have to worry about Washington. They're also down 11 going into the fourth quarter against Connecticut right now. I don't think LA's done with yet, although, like, say the Valkyries lose against Phoenix and LA wins their game, the Valkyries hold the tiebreaker, so they'd still be ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So I still think that having that tiebreaker is going to be very nice to have down the line. Seattle, of course, is for sure still a threat, only being half a game above Seattle. So it kind of looks like your ceiling is six against Indiana. And of course, they have a game against Indiana where they could also, you know what? I want to say they already have the tiebreaker because I think they only play Indiana three times.
Yeah, they won the two games already.
So I think you are just looking at 6-8. And that, you know, of course, like you mentioned, it seems like 2 through 5 is still like can be anyone's. Can be like you could Vegas is 5 right now. They could end up in 2 by like tomorrow. So yeah, I think the Valkyries have after Phoenix. I think they have Dallas, and I think that I want to say they have a little bit of an easier schedule.
I know next weekend they play at home back to back games. So not this weekend, but next weekend because I think we're going to go Saturday to see Washington. Sunday they play back to back. Sunday is Caitlin if she's back, and I would love to go to that game, but Sunday night's a little bit harder. But I think we're going to go Saturday night, which is against Washington. So, you know, there's only, you know, 13 teams or whatever. So you're going to either play one of the top six teams or one of the bottom six teams. Like, that's just how it is. And there is starting to be a little bit of distance, though, if you look at, you know, about the top five. The top five are really kind of creating some distance between the bottom three. So Indiana, Golden State, Seattle, and the Sparks. There is a good top half and much better than the bottom half in the playoffs.
So you got at Phoenix, at Dallas. There are not many left, so I'll just do the whole thing. At Phoenix, at Dallas, versus Washington at home, Indiana at home, New York at home, Dallas at home, Minnesota at home, at Seattle, at Minnesota to close it out. So you're going to be able to have Dallas, Washington at home. And then you said there's a back-to-back for Washington to Indiana. Wouldn't surprise me if they won out all of those games, if depending on, you know, the result against Phoenix, if they win or lose Phoenix, then you have Dallas, Washington, Indiana, but then you do New York, and New York's going to be, you know, playing their butt off because if you look at that 2-5 right now, it being anyone's game, and then you get Dallas at home. And then I think you might've mentioned this not that long ago, but you wonder, considering Minnesota's completely distanced themselves, if any of those two Minnesota games at the end of the regular season, if they just like damn near forfeit and just put out some of their reserves because they want to give the starters rest heading into the long postseason or just the postseason. And so I wonder if any of the, you know, you can, I don't think they haven't beaten Minnesota yet. So I wonder if any of those might change just depending on the product Minnesota decides to put out. They want to give their team some rest. So
all right, that is,
yeah, I think that 6-8 is just probably what it's looking like, and you hope for 6.
Yeah, and that will wrap up the first ever segment of Pod Holla. We're gonna talk Warriors here in a second. Now, there's not as much to talk about the Warriors. Obviously, the offseason and the Warriors are sort of hamstrung by this Jonathan Kuminga scenario. But let's talk about the Warriors and in the death lineup segment. All right. So folks, if you were hanging out for the Valks chat, I appreciate you. We will spend a few minutes talking Warriors, which we haven't done so in several weeks because there's just been not a lot to talk about. What is the latest? What is your do you think this Jonathan Kuminga holdout, or not holdout, but just him holding his contract situation, holding the team hostage in a sense of being unable to make any sort of moves whatsoever because they have to kind of wait until this thing is done. If he comes back to the team, do you think the fan base is going to welcome him, or is he going to kind of get a little bit of heat from the fan base?
I mean, the Twitter fan base is completely different than the ones that show up to the games. You know, that of course there's some overlap, but I don't know how many people actually go into the games or like, yeah, I think he'll be welcomed. I think, you know, if anything, winning solves all. So they start to go on a run and then it doesn't matter. But I think, like you said, we haven't done much Warriors stuff because there hasn't been much news. I would argue that there's still not much news, and there's probably reason to do this segment because there's not much news other than the fact that maybe some promises to sign with the Warriors have surfaced from some players we expected and then maybe one player we didn't expect.
Who was the one player that you didn't expect?
Brogdon.
Okay. No, we're on the same page. So Al Horford is the player who the Warriors are rumored to be bringing in once this Kuminga thing has settled. He fits perfect for what they want to do, though. It, you know, the 5 years ago, Al Horford would be like a tremendous player for the Warriors. He's kind of like the dream player for the Warriors. The other players are their own players. Somebody like Gary Payton, like I think his situation is holding out because of the Kuminga thing too. And then you mentioned Malcolm Brogdon. Now the Warriors, D'Anthony Melton is still rumored to kind of be in the mix. They with Brogdon, that is kind of a more of a true point guard. So maybe we don't get so many spastic Pajimski scenarios there. But I don't know. It's an interesting one. I wouldn't have thought Brogdon, just the style that they play. He's often hurt as well, and he's older, which I guess fits the roster because they're all older. But at the same time, when you have Butler and Steph's contract, you don't really have a lot of opportunity to pick up some of the mid-tier guys. You kind of have to lean towards these lower, riskier vets who you don't know what you're going to get. Well, actually, I would say you know what you're going to get if they can stay healthy, but you also know what they don't do well because they are older. So maybe they're a little predictable, but I don't know. Brogdon wasn't one that I would have thought that would have initially fit. It's I guess it's CP3-ish a little bit. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Brogdon?
I mean, you don't know what Brogdon you're getting, but I think when the Celtics traded him to Portland for Drew, I think it was, he got to kind of do the thing where it's like, hey man, you're on a bad team that's rebuilding, you can like take it easy. And then I think he got traded to Washington at the deadline last year or something like that. So you hope that you get like a Brogdon that's gotten to rest and is healthy and is like, finally I'm on a good team that wants to win again, like here we go. But I think fit wise I'm actually pretty excited about it. Like I think him and the Pajinski minutes would do really well. You could see him starting some games with Steph. Like, he could play defense. You want to put that type of player with Steph. He's of course a vet now, and then you know Steve Kerr does well with vets. So not much on the number digging side, just because it just feels like, I don't know what kind of Brogdon we're getting. It's been some weird years for him. But I think, you know, when we talk about my only worry about this offseason is that, you know, the Warriors and their light years thing, like, these feel like the obvious selections to be on the team to me, like Horford, Brogdon, D'Anthony, where we talk about that championship season. And I always remember that offseason because they were rumored to get Batum and Mills and Patty Mills. Those were like the obvious perfect fits that I think the entire fan base was like, I really hope this happens. And it didn't happen. And instead they get GP2 and Otto Porter Jr.
You mean this guy?
Ends up being, oh my God, you still have that. Like, what the better ends up being, they won a championship. Otto Porter had very big games, very big moments in the regular season and the championship. Like, that was the better option. And I just wonder, like, was there another one of those, like, you know, kind of not unexpected Warriors signings, just because, you know, this is the Patty Mills and Batum, in my opinion, getting Al Horford mm-hmm. and Melton. So I don't know. I think to me, like, yeah, you put a five that can shoot, that is defensive minded, sure, very old in Al Horford, but you know, we were hoping for Vucevic. But that guy can't defend at all. Horford, you know, mm-hmm. it just seems like a fit, like a glove. Of course, like, you know, you want a Horford.
We got a young Vucevic. His name is Quentin Post.
That guy can't help Violet make a layup. I don't know. He can't even help himself make a layup. But yeah, I think on paper, and I think just when I think about who Steve Kerr is as a coach, like, I think these are great options. I think, you know, yeah. And I know it's not as sexy as, like, Kuminga for Kobe White or Kuminga for, you know, you name it, kind of nearing all-star caliber player. But you think about how this team ended the season, hell of a run. You know, they beat the 2 seed like they did a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do have a what if moment that if Steph doesn't go down, are they playing OKC in the Western Conference Finals?
Mm-hmm.
And then we also liked OKC in the years past, even as good as they've been, the Warriors have been able to just like kind of not let them do what they want to do. So I don't know. I just think about that they played so well to end the season and they did it all without Jonathan Kuminga. So, you know, just adding some pieces here and there, they didn't lose anyone. And too important that I can think of, right? Like, I think their entire
rotation is, who'd they lose?
I don't think they've lost. Well, I mean, the one that they were going to lose was GP. That was the rumored. Oh, Kevon Looney. They lost Kevon Looney.
Loon. Okay, correct. But I guess Loon kind of wasn't, you know, like he said in the podcast with Plus Minus, that he wasn't even really in the playoff rotation. You know, he said like, oh, Steven Adams, like, this is where I shine. And they still wouldn't like go to him as like a permanent option in the rotation. So like they didn't really lose anyone from their permanent playoff rotation. And all they did is add. So although it might not be, you know, the all-star player, like I still like the additions, and I wasn't expecting anything too crazy. And maybe Dunleavy has another good swing in the trade deadline. But I think you've got to be kind of excited as a Warriors fan. I think the only thing that you're kind of worried about is like, yeah, like, you know, they were good last year, but last year's teams aren't this year's teams. You know, you look at Houston and literally like what, like if they had one thing, what the, you know, if they had one thing to beat the Warriors, like who's your dream player to add? And then like KD's probably like top three there. If they have KD, I don't think we beat them. They needed half court scoring. You take out Jalen Green and put in KD, I don't think we beat them. But other than that, like, I don't know, just another year of OKC being great.
Yeah, OKC's going to get better. OKC's going to have to make some decisions down the line, too, though, with their roster.
Yeah, I'd say Denver leveled up.
Denver leveled up. And OKC is drafted well, so you would think that they could slide in guys. It doesn't always work like that. But, all right. Do you hope that the LeBron stuff goes away, or do you like that whenever the LeBron stuff is discussed, the Warriors are always at the top of the list of possibilities for LeBron to come on the team?
What LeBron noise have you heard? I haven't heard anything.
So, I mean, it hasn't been of late, but it's just like the way that you could trade for LeBron is if you have a contract that matches his contract, right? Like that's how the NBA trades work. And because the Warriors have this Jimmy contract, like they're always going to be rumored as one of the few teams who could actually make a deal for LeBron. Now, the only reason I say this is because Draymond and Steph seem to always be hanging out with this dude or talking about this dude or bigging up this dude. And I don't know. I mean, at this point, I think I'd rather have this version of Jimmy. But when you watch LeBron on his good days, you're like, oh, man, he's still really good. And he could really fit. You know what the problem with the LeBron stuff is, though? He and Draymond probably can't play together at the same time that well, unless Draymond just has to play five. And maybe that is it. But I just find it interesting that every time the LeBron stuff happens, the Warriors are like right there. Like, oh, you'll also hear Miami and Cleveland just because of his past. But it's like, I wonder if the Warriors like being in there. Like, I wonder if Steph and Draymond like those rumors, or if they're just like, okay, like enough. Like this let this guy play one more year in LA and be done with it. Because it's LA is clearly moving on from him with the Luka stuff. So I don't know. I just find it entertaining. And it's probably the reason. It's probably because, like you said, there's no talk going on right now because it's the offseason and the Warriors get... David Aldridge gave them incomplete on their offseason because they haven't done anything yet. So, all right, last thing here.
I think you'd rather be... I mean, I think you'd rather be in the conversations than not. It's like, what if you're in a bidding war and it's against like a team in the West? It's like, what if Dallas gets him? Then they jump you. You know, Kyrie comes back, Kyrie, Braun, AD, Cooper Flagg, Klay Thompson. Like, if that's the bidding war, then I think you would rather want to be in that than not. Like, if you're like Charlotte and you never hear your name in those conversations. But
I think in order to get LeBron, though, Dallas would have to trade away one of those heavy contracts. Like, they could
probably. I don't know the numbers for them. That would be crazy, though, if they were able to make it work.
Yeah. Last thing, and we'll get out of here. I know because you finally followed me on Letterboxd the other day. I know that you've watched Freaky Tales. Freaky Tales is a movie that had come out, like, gosh, probably in the spring or something. I don't exactly remember, maybe early summer. And it was a small release. It wasn't out for very long. But the thing about Freaky Tales, it's set in 1987 in Oakland. And so there's lots of ties to Bay Area culture in that movie. And what the big point for me was, there's a storyline, a fictional storyline, based around Sleepy Floyd's 29-point quarter playoff game against the Lakers, which caused them to not get swept. The Sleepy Floyd is Superman, as Greg Papa said on the broadcast in 1987. And so I watched a movie. The movie's like built for me. Like, I was catching all the little nuggets of culture and stuff from back then. Though I did catch a faulty one. In one of the scenes, they're playing a Stevie B song, high energy artist that got played a lot in the Bay Area. And they played a song from 1988 and 1987. So I caught that one. it made me think, and because I was thinking about post championship, so post Rick Barry championship, and then they went to the finals back to back years. I don't think anybody in the chat probably saw those, but since that time frame, I think the Sleepy Floyd is Superman game was kind of like the Warriors fans, like the closest thing to a championship. And I was thinking of other moments pre-Steph and pre the 2015 title. I was thinking of other moments that were kind of sort of like that, which are, yeah, they didn't win the title, but they did something that made the Bay Area fans so excited. And I thought of two other moments that I just wanted to shout out. If people in the comments even remember these moments, or if you have others, let us know. But like the pre-Steph Curry World Championship time frame, two of those other moments. One was drafting Chris Webber, and for the 1 year that he was on the team, he and Latrell Sprewell made the Warriors cool. Tim Hardaway gets hurt before that season even starts. Had they had Tim Hardaway, they might have been even better. But really, Sprewell is all NBA. We know what happens with Sprewell only a couple years later. I saw Sprewell at Evergreen College. The Warriors were in San Jose for a year, and so they were practicing at Evergreen College, and me and your uncle went out there. And so there's a bus, the Warriors bus, and you got all these fans, and you see the people coming out of the gym. Somehow, Sprewell and a couple of other guys had kind of ducked out another way, so they didn't have to sign any autographs, and they were just on the bus. Dicks. So that Webber Sprewell team, like, that was a cool moment. Now, they got beat in the first round of the playoffs. They were not competitive. But at that point, you were like, oh my gosh, Chris Webber, Latrell Sprewell, let's wait for Hardaway to come back. Chris Mullin is still on this roster. They may be good. And then it just falls out the next season. And then the last one, of course, is the We Believe team. Anything pre-Steph, it's those three things for me and my Warriors fandom. If you haven't seen the Sleepy Floyd is Superman game, I think it's on the NBA League Pass. Like, it used to be on there. I don't know if it's still on there, but you know, when you go to certain teams and they have like the historic games, I remember that being that game being on there. And then of course the We Believe stuff. It's so hard to find. I think it's because it was like right before the transition from the transition to HD. So like a lot of the video quality is really bad, but you know, people remember that time frame. So yeah, that's it. Not a ton going on in Warriors land, but you know, once they figure out this Jonathan Kuminga thing, and for my sake, or not even my sake, for Jonathan Kuminga's sake, I hope he gets somewhat of what he wants, because I don't think it does him any favors to be on this roster next year, because Steve Kerr is not going to play him. Like, it's just not, he's not a fan of Jonathan Kuminga's game. And especially if they bring in all these vets, is he going to play Kuminga instead of Al Harrington down the stretch of important games? Al Horford. Al Harrington was on the We Believe team. That's why I mentioned Al Harrington. But for Kuminga, I just hope that they find a nice deal to send him elsewhere. That 2 for $45 seems like that's really the only deal that's out there for him, and that's what he's holding out for. So I don't know. It seems like if he accepts that qualifying deal, oh my gosh, he's going to be giving up a lot of money. But he hits free agency, you know, next year. So that, I guess, that would be the benefit. Anyways, it's been a very interesting ride with Jonathan Kuminga every single year with Kuminga. And, you know, we had our Kuminga watch era from 2022. We had our Kamudi watch era from that time frame as well. And I think now it's just time that he's got to find another team for the benefit of his career, because I want to see him do well. I don't want to see him play poorly. So, all right, that is it from here. Bri's out next week, so I'm going to try my best to bring on Conrado, who I haven't even reached out to him. So
surprise.
I'm going to try to bring him on and work around his schedule. We'll see. If he can't do it, I'll figure out something else. But because Conrado talks Valkyries and Warriors equally well also. So that will hopefully that works out. But OK, that is it from here. For Bri, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.